With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Grasshoppers and crickets destroy crops in the North State. Farmers along the California-Oregon border have reported millions of dollars in losses from a torrent of grasshoppers and Mormon crickets feeding on rangeland and irrigated crops this season. Siskiyou County Agricultural Commissioner James Smith filed a request with the California Office of Emergency Services seeking a disaster declaration from the Secretary of the State Department of Food and Agriculture. The preliminary damage to farmers in the county is estimated at $8.6 million in reported crop losses of pasture, rangeland, alfalfa, and small grain crops. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Taxpayer groups speak against increasing support in the next farm bill. The Environmental Working Group hosted a press conference with different organizations opposed to raising farmer support in the next farm bill. Josh Sewell, senior policy analyst with Taxpayers for Common Sense, says there's no need to boost farm subsidies.
And I think this is especially true as the farm sector is not in crisis. The USDA just projected net farm income in 2023 to be $141 billion. That's more than 20% above the 20-year average for annual net farm income. And remember, this is after a record $183 billion in net farm income last year. The numbers just don't lie. Farm income is up. It's outpacing costs. Bankruptcies are low. Farm equity is high. And most crop prices are above long-term averages.
Sewell says while a farm safety net is necessary, it does need some reform.
It's important to remember that taxpayers can afford a farm safety net if it's focused on those truly in need, reflects our fiscal challenges, and which fosters resilience instead of dependence on taxpayer subsidies. But leaving federally subsidized crop insurance unexamined and increasing government-enforced crop prices in the Farm Bill Commodities title are things we cannot afford. It's simple for people who are seriously concerned with our debts and deficits. The next farm bill must reform the farm safety net, not increase farm subsidies.
Chris Edwards, director of tax policy studies for Cato Institute, says crop insurance is a specific area that needs reform.
The largest subsidy program is crop insurance. It has no income limits. Even billionaires receive crop insurance subsidies. Crop insurance was expanded in recent decades so that Congress wouldn't have to do all these emergency bailout bills, but it does the emergency bailout bills anyway. So under Trump, for example, $23 billion in extra farm subsidies was passed related to trade disputes.
NAFB contributed to that report, and now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
It's been a bit of a rough year with weeds in rice fields, particularly watergrass species and sprangletop. Rice farm advisor Whitney Brim DeForest noted some of the weed issues in the area that could become more problematic long term.
I noticed quite a bit of control issues in quite a few fields and was getting a lot of calls, especially for watergrass control. Most of what I'm hearing from people in the field is that we're seeing more and more resistance just generally in the watergrass species. But I would say that we're over-relying on propanil as a tool to control watergrass. And so a lot of people are doing double propanil application, which is application 1 week followed by another application about a week later. And, you know, in my mind, we're sort of coming upon a time where it won't work anymore because we're going to be selecting for more and more resistance to propanil by doing that double application. So I'm trying to encourage folks to move away from that.
AgSafe will be hosting a series of informational events throughout the month of October. AgSafe CEO Teresa Keene will be joined by local industry safety and human resource professionals for a series of outreach briefings to help industry members stay informed and engaged. The first event will take place at Alpac Braga Ranch in Soledad on October 4th. Another briefing will be held on October 5th in Santa Maria at Rancho Guadalupe. The following week, on October 10th, a briefing will be held at the AgSafe office in Modesto. The final two events will be held at the Western Agricultural Processors Association in Fresno on October 18th and October 19th at Hoddle's in Bakersfield. All of the briefings will begin at 9 a.m. and will offer opportunities to exchange ideas, ask questions, and reconnect with like-minded individuals in the ag industry. More information about the outreach briefings is available at agsafe.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
October 12th is National Farmers Day, a time dedicated to those who wake before the sun rises and often work until long after it sets. Thanks to farmers' tireless efforts, we have the food, feed, fiber, and fuel we need here in America and plenty more for export. Best of all, farmers produce all of this sustainably so that future generations can have the same bounty. Today and every day, please join Syngenta in honoring the men and women of American agriculture.
Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, at the AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum held this week in Kansas City, Missouri, USDA economist Seth Meyer said this year has seen some very strong domestic demand for soybeans.
But on the demand side for the U.S., you go, well, you know, are we facing a challenge out of South America on those big supplies? Is that something to be really concerned about? Well, you always like strong export markets. But another aspect of this domestically is we've got pretty strong domestic markets for soybeans as well, too. And that's what's supporting probably a bean-to-corn price ratio above 2.6 this year. You got very strong domestic demand. And to the point that as we see estimates in yields change or production change within the United States, crush stays fairly stable and the difference comes out of trade and comes out of exports. Why? Because crush margin is in the U.S. is pretty strong relative to history. We've got capacity growing a little bit. It's supported by positive crush margins, and so that crop is going to be crushed domestically, and that's also what's supporting soybean prices domestically. And a lot of that is based upon the oil value.
In fact, he says oil value is much higher than it has been historically, and as much as 40% of the value of the soybean now comes from the oil share.
A lot of that being supported by domestic policy when it comes to biofuels, when it comes to the potential for sustainable aviation fuels. A lot of that, again, coming from demand for oil domestically supporting that soybean crush. Okay, so again, I think when we think about the balance sheet for soybeans, crush less responsive to price than exports or stocks.
As for bean exports, he says some conditions around the globe have changed the game.
You can say, hey, we're facing competition going forward. Brazilians had a large second crop this year. Under normal weather conditions, they will see a strong rebound in their production. And normal weather conditions includes a shift from La Nina to El Nino in Argentina, La Nina being a negative for the Argentines and being a positive for an El Nino. So it's reasonable, you know, a normal weather assumption would be a strong rebound, so we'll face additional soybean competition pressure going forward.
He says that's made changes for our competition.
And here's really the competition we face in the export market. I show you, so you got 2 years of decline. Again, reminding you, we're coming out of 3 years of a La Nina, negative effects in Argentine production, maybe some in Australia, to a more normal weather estimate, gets you over 211 million metric tons of soybean production. That's a big number, and that's what will be providing potential competition to us.
Meyer said even if beans and corn, for that matter, are stable, there could be some instability in other markets.
In conclusion here, I think the market's become pretty satisfied with where it's at for corn and beans. I think real risks remain in the global wheat market, and I think real risks remain in the global rice market, which could then kick off problems in other commodities if you have spillover in wheat from countries cutting off supplies of rice. And again, El Nino tends to affect rice, so there is some impetus to see some instability returning to the market, even if it's not in corn and beans.
Again, that was USDA economist Seth Meyer speaking at the AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, more milk production and slightly lower prices. That's the forecast, at least for 2024. Gary Crawford has the story.
For dairy producers, 2024 is likely to show the same basic trends as every year, an increase in output with a decrease in milk prices, but maybe smaller price decreases next year than originally forecast, with 2024 milk output
up 2.9 billion pounds from 2023.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says that would be about a 1% increase from this year. Now, you'd expect milk prices then to drop by 1% or so next year, but the decline may be less than that. USDA adding almost a dollar to the forecast, now at $20.30. Why the stronger forecast?
Cheese and butter are showing strong demand, relatively tight stocks supporting those prices. So relatively good dairy demand strength supporting product prices, which kind of by extension supports the class prices and the all milk price,
which would still be about 10 cents lower than this year's price, but a much better price than had been expected. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. And Mark Jekinowski, USDA's Outlook Board Chairman, provides more numbers from USDA's 2024 milk production forecast.
For 2024, I mean, we are looking at an increase in production. So we're currently forecasting 230 billion 400 million pounds of milk, up 2.9 billion pounds from 2023.
Again, that was USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekinowski. And U.S. Senator Josh Hawley last week introduced the Strengthening Antitrust Enforcement for Meatpacking Act. The Missouri Republicans' bill would empower antitrust enforcers to break up giant meatpacking and poultry monopolies. RCAF USA CEO Bill Bullard said his group applauds Senator Hawley's novel approach to addressing the unintentable market concentrations faced by America's cattle and sheep producers. The bill would actually establish two thresholds for determining the market concentration in the meatpacking industry, using the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index, or HHI, which is a measure of market concentration presently employed by the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission. The bill would prohibit a merger or acquisition by a meatpacker if the HHI would exceed 1,800, or if a proposed merger or acquisition would increase the meatpacker's current HHI index by 100. The current guidelines consider an HHI below 1,500 to be unconcentrated, an HHI between 1,500 and 2,500 to be moderately concentrated. The Hawley bill would prohibit mergers currently considered moderately concentrated. And a reminder, World Dairy Expo is hosting their Dairy Symposium featuring the dairy business innovation initiatives from across the country on October 3rd. The Dairy Symposium is free to attend if you have a paid admission to World Dairy Expo, which, of course, is coming up next week. To learn more about this, simply go to worlddairyexpo.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The USDA is giving more children access to school day meals. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The Department of Agriculture this week announced it's giving an estimated 3,000 more school districts in high-need areas the option to serve breakfast and lunch to all students at no cost. The expansion is possible through the Community Eligibility Provision, commonly known as CEP. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says the effort will decrease childhood hunger, improve child health and student readiness, and put our nation on the path to better nutrition and wellness. CEP is a simplified meal service option that allows schools to provide meals at no cost to all students without requiring families to apply for free and reduced-priced meals. School districts receive federal funding based on a formula using existing data. Previously, at least 40% of students had to live in households participating in federal assistance programs for a school or school district to be eligible for CEP. The final rule lowers that threshold from 40% to 25%. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
When it comes to a farm commodity price perspective,
we're kind of heading in a direction where the market's much more sanguine about supplies for corn, for beans, and yet we maintain a fair amount of uncertainty for wheat. And I think that's not surprising given what we're observing in the Black Sea.
USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer at this week's AgriPulse Agricultural Outlook Forum in Kansas City. He says prices for those commodities, and commodities in general, are easing compared to higher prices at the start of the Ukrainian conflict.
At a global level, when it comes to corn and beans, we're facing increased competition. And that's also why I think you're seeing the volatility narrow. There appear to be substantive enough crops that folks aren't anxious about the pricing of those crops.
What this may mean regarding farm income in 2023... perhaps a narrowing of margins, with farm prices coming down and a slowing down of the decrease in farm input prices this year. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. A cattle market reform bill could end up in the next farm bill. It would establish regional cash minimums to increase transparency and accountability in the cattle market and provide producers with more market information. It's the result of problems associated with contracted cattle. But there are broader issues with ag production contracts in general. Proposed legislation in the U.S. Senate attempts to address problems in the cattle market as a result of contracted cattle. It's trying to address one aspect of contracting for ag products. But there are broader concerns with ag production contracts. It's a matter of market power. Very few farmers have anywhere near the level of bargaining power that the contracting firm has. That will cause the division of revenue to shift over time to the party that has market power. Also, the contracting firm is likely to negotiate for ownership of the product involved, with the producer only having the right to receive a contract payment for labor services rendered. But while the producer receives only compensation under the contract, the producer still bears significant economic and legal risk. The end result in many instances is that production contracts are used as a way to shift those risks onto farmers. Perhaps the most serious concern, however, is that if the contracting firm has sufficient market power, production contracts can distort open and competitive markets. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
What does grower adoption of precision agricultural tools and techniques look like in the digital era? USDA and land-grant university researchers recently investigated this question, the findings of which became the basis of a study.
Precision agriculture provides one opportunity to respond, at least in part, to several challenges. In response to that, we developed the report to take a more in-depth look at how farmers are using the technology.
It's been many years since a report that's anything like this has been released, and over those many, many years, we were interested to see if adoption rates have changed, especially in the 1990s. If we were then looking forward, we would have expected maybe almost ubiquitous adoption by now, but the reality is it hasn't happened, and we were curious what has transpired in the last decade.
Jonathan McFadden of the Economic Research Service and Terry Griffin of Kansas State University were among the researchers involved in this USDA study. McFadden offers some of the study's findings.
Our first key finding is that adoption of automated guidance has risen sharply in the past 20 years. Now there's adoption on more than 50% of planted acres for corn, soybeans, winter wheat, cotton, sorghum, and rice.
Also, adoption rates vary by farm size.
At least half of what we define to be relatively large row crop farms rely on yield maps, soil maps, variable rate technologies, or guidance systems.
And the third key finding of the study.
There have been several drivers contributing to this increased use by farmers of precision technologies. That would include things like farm size, technology costs, expected boost to productivity, labor saving benefits, as well as USDA programs.
An additional finding is that digital agriculture practitioners tend to utilize both technical and consulting services more than farmers not using digital ag practices and technologies.
Similar findings when you think about things like soil or tissue sample collection, nutrient recommendations and management services, things like pest scouting and pest control, as well as services related to managing irrigation. We find that adopters are more likely than non-adopters to use these types of services.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
December corn slipped below $5 back on August 16th and hasn't returned. Looking at red December 2024 corn futures, still above $5. I'm Mark Oppold with today's bottom line report brought to you by Helena and Kloss Equipment. Maximize your harvest potential with the efficiency, reliability, and affordability of the Kloss Treon 740 Combine. Learn more at Kloss.com. Bottom line, grain analysts are always looking for opportunities for producers to be more profitable. They're keeping an eye on red December 2024 corn. Last time it closed below $5 was back on July 12th. It's been in a tight range since early August, but always above $5. Analysts suggest pricing 2%, maybe up to 5% of next year's corn crop right now. As one said, we hope it's the lowest price of the year. 2024 November soybeans offer no incentive, right now 30 cents below the current November, and the same for Kansas City July wheat, less than a nickel, separating from the current level. Helena says improve your fertilizer efficiency and increase yield potential for next season right now with compounds like Resurge. Visit HelenaAgra.com to learn more. This is the Bottom Line Report. Keep an eye on the soybean ending stocks number tomorrow. It could offer one of the surprises in the report. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Food price inflation forecast for 2023. We'll hear the latest from a USDA economist. USDA economist Mac McGlanchin with the latest forecast for 2023 food price inflation.
For all food, we are forecasting that food prices will increase by 5.8%. Food at home will increase by 5.1%, and food away from home will increase by 7.1%. This is pretty well in line with what we forecasted last month. We had very slight decreases in all food and food at home, but food away from home, we have the exact same forecast this month as we did last month.
McLanchin goes on to say that food price hikes are ramping down as food chain problems continue to lessen.
For the most part, what we've seen is just this gradual ramping down. And what we haven't seen is some of the very large scale problems that we saw in the food supply chain in 2022. Remember, there were very large outbreaks of avian influenza that year, as well as growing international conflicts.
A USDA economist says there have been changes this year in the soybean market. At the AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum held this week in Kansas City, Missouri, USDA economist Seth Meyer said this year has seen some very strong domestic demand for soybeans.
As we see estimates in yields change or production change within the United States, crush stays fairly stable and the difference comes out of trade and comes out of exports. Why? Because crush margin is in the U.S. is pretty strong relative to history. We've got capacity growing a little bit. It's supported by positive crush margins. And so that crop is going to be crushed domestically.
In fact, he says oil value is much higher than it has been historically. And as much as 40% of the value of the soybean now comes from the oil share. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
Here's a TV commercial stab from the past from 1969.
It's a real thing.
We are playing this old Coke commercial not to sell the product. We at the Agriculture Department, not allowed to do that. But the Ag Department has been working with the Coca-Cola Company for 10 years now to do a lot of environmental work in our national forests, wetlands, and watersheds, work to improve the quality of water coming out of those watersheds and going into homes and businesses. Coca-Cola and the USDA, the Ag Department, forged a 5-year agreement back in 2013 to share the costs of those projects. The agreement worked so well it was renewed in 2018 for another 5 years, and a few days ago in Washington, officials of the Coca-Cola Company and USDA got together to renew it again. The Ag Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Natural Resources, Merrill Harrell, says under the agreement,
we're able to co-invest in watershed projects in a number of places around the country to be able to accomplish water treatments that make a difference to watershed health, to aquatic habitat, and to quality of water for communities downstream.
But why are the folks at Coke interested in sharing the cost of those projects? We asked Kirsten Witt with Coke's environmental policy team.
It is part of our purpose and our mission to make a difference and ensure that the communities that we serve are healthy and sustainable. And water is a critical component of that. And so for us, it's also the main ingredient in our beverage.
So the company does have an interest in sharing with the U.S. Forest Service the costs of watershed improvement projects. What kinds of projects? Kurt Ritter with the company's sustainability function gave us an example.
Recent project we completed together in Gunnison, Colorado, where a lot of the runoff from the water from the mountains doesn't properly enter into the wetlands, and it runs off in the streams without being preserved. So by restoring some of the wetland habitat through the creation of beaver dams and other man-made initiatives, you can actually conserve more water up in the wetlands that then can continuously benefit the surrounding habitat that depends on that water.
And Deputy Agriculture Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small told the signing ceremony for the new agreement that the partnership with Coke over the last 10 years has produced very good results.
So far, the partnership has resulted in 900 acres of land restored, which achieved over 14 miles of stream restoration, with more than 1,000 stream restoration structures installed, and 17 miles of river, as well as 62 acres of upstream lake reconnected.
And so with that, she and Kurt Ritter signed the agreement, extending the partnership for 5 more years. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. And we're talking to Senior Specialist of Industry Communications for the Almond Board, Taylor Hillman, once again this morning, highlighting some of the events surrounding the Almond Conference. And as always, that means that the awards are coming up. And so let's start there with what some of these awards are and kind of get into some more detail about them.
That's right, Brian. It is awards season. The Almond Board of California recognizes 2 individuals from the almond industry every year that have contributed. And it's an exciting time, and it's a way for industry members to nominate the dedication and accomplishments of people they know in the industry. And then we pick the winners for these two awards, and we announced them at the Almond Conference 2023 at the gala. And it's exciting, it's fun, and it's really turned into a celebration for the industry.
Yeah, it's a good way to just kind of highlight some of the contributions made there and acknowledge people that are going maybe above and beyond in some regards. And there are two awards that are given out each year. And what are the awards, and what are some of the qualifications or eligibility for these?
That's right. Eligibility really is open to anyone. But the first award is the Almond Achievement Award. This is the one that we've been doing since 2011. The goal of the Almond Achievement Award is to recognize an industry member who's added value through long-term service for the betterment of the California almond industry. Recipients are individuals with long-standing and direct involvement in the industry. They demonstrate lasting impact and commitment to the almond industry. Last year's winner was Brian Ezell from The Wonderful Company, but there's been a long list of growers since 2011 that many people in the industry are familiar with. George Goshgarian Sr., Jim Paiva, Rob Kiss, Tony Campos, Dave Phippen, Jim Jasper, just to name a few. It goes on and on and on. So it's a very recognizable list, and it's an award that is meant to highlight the efforts that are done by industry members that, you know, oftentimes are noticed in their small area, but not as an industry whole.
Very good. And like you said, that one has quite a bit of history behind it with some notable names that have been included there on that list. But the second award is relatively new, isn't it? What is this one?
Yeah, the Almond Technical Achievement Award. We started this back in 2021. And the goal of the Almond Technical Achievement Award is to recognize an industry or allied industry member who's contributed a significant technical advancement for the betterment of the California industry, either through research or innovation or even helping to facilitate adoption of practices. So this is a unique award that we created for kind of the other side of the industry. And last year's winner was a perfect example of one of those, which is Paul Lum from the California Farmland Trust. Paul has a long history of helping growers with the adoption of conservation practices, and that's one side of this award. The first winner of this award in 2021 was Ken Stevenson, and he was very much on the research and technical side of this. So again, this is kind of an all-encompassing award for people who are involved in the research or working with growers or the innovation in practices for the industry.
Well, very good. So definitely some opportunities there for a wide range of applications and nominations there. And how can people be nominated for these awards?
Yeah, they can go to almonds.com/awards. Both of the applications are on there for someone to nominate. The applications probably take about 20 minutes. There's some text areas to fill in on some history and background of the person you're nominating. You can also input any awards or recognitions that they have, but it really is a fairly easy application process. And like I said, there is no criteria you have to meet, but there is some suggestions on who would make a good candidate for these awards. So again, almonds.com/awards, and we will be accepting applications or nominations through October 31st.
Very good. So definitely some time to get some of those nominations in there. And the awards, like you said, will be presented at the Almond Conference during the gala. And what is the gala going to look like this year?
Yeah, that's right. So at the Almond Conference 2023, at the gala dinner, that's when we announce the award winners. And this year's gala will again take place on Wednesday. Last year, we moved it from Thursday to Wednesday of the conference, and that proved to be a big hit with attendees. So we're keeping it on Wednesday, December 6th this year. And the cocktail reception begins at 6 o'clock, runs from 6 to 7. And at 7 o'clock, the gala dinner and awards starts. We opted not to have entertainment this year. Usually we have some sort of a guest, entertainment guest there. We have a small band playing during the reception, but we're not doing entertainment this year. As we know, you know, it's a little tight this year for the industry, and we know people like to get on to other industry events going on that night too. So again, this is happening Wednesday, December 6th. It is extra to attend the dinner that night, but it really is a really nice dinner. We're going to have the awards ceremony. And being that we don't have entertainment, this is a really good opportunity to hang out, have that camaraderie with your industry members that maybe we didn't in the past because we got right into the entertainment. So should be a fun night on Wednesday, December 6th at the Allman Conference 2023. And people can register for the Allman Conference. Registration is open. Hotel blocks are open. There are hotels still available. The hotels across the way from the convention center, the popular ones, they are pretty booked up. There are a few single nights available at those hotels, but they are pretty booked up. Those go pretty fast. But the other hotel blocks, there is some room still available there. So you can go to allmans.com/conference to find all that information and register and get up set up for the Allman Conference 2023.
You're listening to AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Organic strawberries bring higher prices. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows organic strawberries offer growers higher prices than conventional strawberries. Fresh strawberry prices tend to exhibit strong seasonal trends, partly because of their relatively short shelf life. In the United States, grower prices for fresh organic strawberries move in tandem with conventional strawberry prices throughout the year, while also typically running 40 to 50% higher than conventional prices. This difference is known as a price premium. In late fall and throughout winter, supply wanes even though demand remains robust. During this period, grower price premiums for organic strawberries rise above typical levels. From 2018 to 2022, the highest average price premium was in January, when organic strawberry prices were 74 to 88% higher than conventional strawberries. Price premiums in July averaged 18 to 24%. Since 2008, domestic organic strawberry acreage has tripled in California, which provides about 75% of U.S. organic strawberry production. And AFB contributed to that report. And in more agriculture news, a new policy proposal in Pennsylvania would mandate the increased use of electric vehicles in the state, mimicking California. Chad Smith has more in this report.
It would replicate California's Advanced Clean Cars 2 policy and effectively ban the manufacturing of internal combustion engines by 2035. Bill Dunn, president of the Pennsylvania Cattlemen's Association, says this proposed mandate should matter to everyone.
Number one, from a mandate standpoint, I don't think we should be mandating things like this. My association obviously isn't opposed to technology and improved technologies, but this certainly isn't one that fits rural lifestyle, especially an agricultural rural lifestyle. One of the main things that we oppose is the fact that there's a lot of unintended consequences that no one has really thought about. 40% of the corn grown here in Pennsylvania goes for ethanol. If we would switch to EVs, it could potentially cut demand for ethanol by 90%, possibly resulting in a 50% drop in the price of corn.
He says the EVs are too expensive for many people.
Why my association production as opposed to it is simply the effect that it would have on already financially strapped individuals and families in rural Pennsylvania. The median income in Pennsylvania is a little over $63,000. In rural Pennsylvania, it's even less than that. These vehicles, when you think about it, a $66,000 average price tag for an EV right now, you know, it almost takes a $120,000 income to afford these vehicles. It's going to punish our rural people and our people that are invested in a rural lifestyle and an agricultural living. It's going to be a disproportionate punishment to those people.
A recent survey clearly showed Pennsylvanians' thoughts about electric vehicles.
There was a recent survey in Pennsylvania that only 6% of the respondents say that they are very likely to purchase an EV in the next 2 to 3 years. But I think the most important thing about that is only 6% of the respondents strongly supported adding an additional charge on people's electric bills to pay to fund the building of these charging stations.
The Pennsylvania cattlemen oppose the mandate that puts new burdens on residents in the middle of higher costs and inflation.
I think it's crazy. When you think about these charging stations, it's going to cost over $5,000 per vehicle to build these stations. And I just don't know that Pennsylvanians can afford this at this time. I mean, when we're talking about 20-year high inflation, some people have adjustable mortgages that have quadrupled in the last year. And I don't see how we can afford this to be mandated on us. I mean, if people voluntarily want to do it, that's great. But as an association, we're opposed to forcing it upon people.
Again, Bill Dunn is president of the Pennsylvania Cattlemen's Association. Chad Smith reporting.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.